This is the Pillars of Health podcast. Danny, Aaron, and John will provide you the necessary information in order to build better habits when it comes to strength training, nutrition, sleep, and stress management. Check us out on pillarsofhealthpod.com.
Welcome to the Pillars of Health podcast, episode 103. We're doing the representation episode today with Danny Lazarus, and I want to welcome Danny to the podcast. Welcome, Danny.
Thank you, sir. Much appreciated. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and you're joining us on a permanent basis, Aaron and myself, as one of the resident hosts, so glad to have you on board.
Yeah, pleasure and honor. It's really exciting. Yeah, really looking forward to just sharing with you guys. I mean, you know, as you know, we go a ways back, and I always just really respected everything that you did and Aaron did. Really had a lot of appreciation for it. So, yeah, I'm really excited to be part of the team and just to be able to share and learn.
Yeah, I mean, one minute you're checking the sauna at BSC, the next we're doing a podcast together. So
I didn't check the sauna at BSC too often.
Once is good enough.
Well, you don't know what hurts you, man. Live and let live.
That's right.
My philosophy.
That's right.
Like, live your best life. I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now we're talking about July 2020. We're in the midst of some, you know, fairly life-changing events in the course of human history. And I definitely see a change in a lot of different industries, and especially the fitness industry ahead, and how and who lead us, you know what I mean? And I think when it comes to the industry that we're in, I think we need to hear from more people in relation. And when I say more people, I mean people who don't necessarily look like the people who are already leading. You know, and that's kind of what spurred this representation episode, because a lot of the main voices or leaders, you know, so-called leaders in the fitness industry are white males, right? And so we wanted to kind of get this on record and kind of talk about what it means to show people from other backgrounds, people of other races, and to kind of normalize that in itself when it comes to being a coach or a trainer. Right. And so we're kind of focusing on your journey a little bit today.
Cool. Yeah, man. Happy to share. You know, I don't think my journey is too different than a lot of people that got into personal training and fitness.
Right.
I feel like you kind of navigate in that arena one of two ways. You either are like went to school for it because you were an athlete and you were like very into like kinesiology and exercise science, and that was your degree. And that's kind of where, you know, that's one of the career paths they present to you when you're kind of going through school.
Yeah.
And I think that's one way. And I think another way is you're just like a meathead in the gym and you're just always working out. You're always in a corporate gym environment where you see people training, whether it's the general population or bodybuilders or athletes. And you kind of start learning. You see personal trainers working. You say, like, I want to be in the gym all day and just like help people get to their goals and just be around weights and just hang out here. This is like my environment, you know.
Right.
That was more for me. It was more the latter. Like, I had my school in exercise science. It was in fine arts. So I didn't realize, you know, I was lifting weights in college to be like, I don't know, I was trying to be the most muscular artist in the game. I know what I was really going for. Like, I break brushes. So but you know, later on, after you kind of come out of school and you kind of explore from different job fields and you're trying to find yourself, I just always found my only place of refuge and happiness was going to the gym. It was like not just like working out and lifting weights and just working on myself, but just sharing ideas and thoughts and camaraderie with the people in there. I think you kind of realize you're with a lot of like-minded people. So that was my route. And then, you know, I just, the more I did that, the more I realized that's what I wanted to do as a career, at least for the time being. And then it just kind of took off and it just went from there.
Right.
So
right.
I think kind of circling back to this topic, it's all about representation. I think where it was important for me was I had a couple of people early on that were very helpful as like mentors, gave me a little bit of guidance. Some it was just very quick conversations, just quick tips. And for others, it was just seeing by example, like people like myself that were doing really well
in
personal training. And I think the more I just talked to people, the more I researched it, the more I had an idea of what to do. But more importantly than knowing what to do is just knowing that I could do it. You know, I think that was a big thing. I think you're getting into an industry where it's salesy. If you're a personal trainer in a commercial gym, it's very salesy. You're having to market yourself and pitch yourself. And if you feel like you don't look and sound like the people that you're selling to, it might throw you off a little bit, and it might be a little jarring for your confidence. And that's one thing I can say to anybody getting into fitness as a business and trying to sell themselves, whether it's group X or training. If you're not presenting with confidence and you're not certain that, like, I don't care who you are, I can help you and I can train you and you're going to benefit from working with me. And if you can't sell yourself that way, you're going to struggle for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're looking at gyms and you're looking at a lot of these environments, I mean, I've been working for Equinox for the last the last seven and a half years. And, you know, that's a mix of people, but when you look at the membership base, it's primarily upper middle class to upper class white people.
Right.
With some other people mixed in. And especially when I was younger and first starting out, that's like, these aren't people that I look like or sound like, so am I going to be okay? But knowing that Kenya Nettingham, he was extremely helpful and influential when I first started out, because he had been a pretty successful personal trainer at a kind of similar Wall Street-esque financial district club down in Pennsylvania, down in Philadelphia, for a while. And, you know, as a young black man who was, the majority of his clients were wealthy white men, he was crushing it. And he was always doing well in it. He didn't do anything special. He just talked to me about, like, how he marketed himself, some of the things he did. And it wasn't anything that he did that he addressed, like, I'm a black man in this industry that's not predominantly black. Right. It was just that he approached it with confidence and success. Mm-hmm. And seeing that was like, oh, okay, like, I'll be fine.
Yeah,
I just have to take some advice from this guy, and whoever else I'm willing to learn from. So I think that was key for me starting out. I think that's where it comes down to. I think you can look at, I won't get into all the numbers of it, but I forget the quote, I have it written down. It's like basic human nature to achieve something only once you truly believe it can be achieved.
Right.
And I think that, to me, is what representation means a lot in what we're talking about. Not just for myself as a black man, but as, you know, for anybody that's in an underrepresented group in any kind of field they're trying to work in. So whether you're a woman, whether you have a disability, you know, anything like that, I think when you know that it can be done, so you look at, like, when the 4-minute mile was finally broken, and then it was broken over and over and over again years on after that, I think that's just how we are as humans. Yeah. So I think that's why representation is so important. That's why I'm glad I'm going to talk about it today, is I think it's something that can be addressed. And I think the more I can help people kind of realize their potential, the more good we can do, which is right. Why we got into what we do in the first place.
Right. Now, just to interject real quick, in your opinion, just on what you touched on just a little bit earlier, do you think, like, the missing element of when you do your exercise degree in college, the missing element there in the college setting is actually, like, how to relate to people and how to sell to people? Because you can have all the anatomy knowledge, but not be able to actually relate to another human being, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, there's no, like, college for personal training. It's its own, you know, there's not...
Idea.
University of Phoenix, is that what you call it? No, I think, I mean, there's academies, like little 6-month academies, little courses you can take on it. There's workshops. There's, you know, you kind of have to be self-taught. It's like a vocation or a trade. It's way much more that in terms of what we do.
Right.
I think what you're studying in college is, like, the science and the movement of it all.
Yeah.
Like, you're studying how the body works and how to be a good coach and how to get your athlete to perform. But it's not like, you know, it's not like afterwards, you know, if you're a strength coach and you work for, like, a sports team, or you work for...
Right.
You know, a school or something like that, your job is to be present, be there, and coach whoever's brought to you on, like, a salary, and the structure kind of varies. As a personal trainer, it is like you're just constantly selling yourself.
Yeah.
So it's a whole different marketing thing. It's a whole different animal. So yeah, people that are interested in that definitely have a lot more learning and preparation to do if they want to get into personal training. I know different gyms like to go and market to and recruit from students that are going to get their degree in, like, kines or exercise science or phys, whatever.
Yeah.
But because they're great coaches, they're great trainers, they're very well educated, but it's a whole different ballgame. So you learn pretty quick, and I think that's where it was helpful for me to have mentors and have people I could look to for as examples of, like, what to do and also what not to do.
Yeah, kind of get into that. Talk a little bit about, like, who are some of your early mentors? Who really made an impression on you and kind of showed you, like, oh, I can do this, and this is also, like, the blueprint on how to do this, right?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of people keep to mind. There's aside from my cousin Kenya, who I think was probably the biggest ongoing help, because, you know, he just was always able to give me, like, some first steps and next steps. And again, I saw him doing well. He's still doing well. He runs his own PT business now, and he does really well with it. I remember I had a chance, like, friend of a friend. I was, you know, kind of right on the cusp of just, like, taking the dive into, you know, signing up for my cert and, like, you know, starting to apply for positions and jobs and just kind of figuring out what to do. And I knew someone that said, hey, I know this guy. He's a trainer at... The New York Sports Club on Wall Street. And I was still living in Brooklyn at the time, but I was moving up to Boston pretty soon. He said he does pretty well there. You know, you got to meet him. He's said you can buy him, you know, meet him for a coffee and just, you know, he'd be happy to sit down with you and help you out a little bit. And I was like, yeah, that'd be great. I'm willing to hear from anybody. And I didn't know much about the guy, but I met with him, and he was, his name's Tony Charles. He's possibly the most energetic black man I've ever met in my entire life. I met him at Starbucks, and I'm like, have you been here for a while just drinking coffee? before I arrived, because he was just like so. Yeah. But what was cool about it was like he was just so excited to share with me and to teach.
Right.
And I think like you could see that passion in him, and I think that's probably what sold him so well, was that he probably brought that to his job. So he was at the Wall Street location of New York Sports Club. It's all like rich white finance guys, and I didn't notice about him until he told me a little about himself, and then like I kind of Googled him afterwards, and I didn't realize he was like the top trainer for the company for like 5-6 years running. Like he was, you know, 220 to 275 sessions a month at times. Like it was like insane numbers where it's like, I don't think there's that many hours in a week to work, but he's doing it. And I think a couple things that stuck out to me was he gave me just great advice. He gave me tips on like just how to market yourself and how to be seen and like, you know, just being genuine, but also making sure that like, you know, there's no such thing as bad free advertising as X, Y, Z.
Right.
But I noticed that one thing that I wanted to bring up, because it's something that is a constant, either conscious or subconscious presence for Black people and for a lot of people of color that I don't think people always recognize, is we kind of live in this world of code switch. And by code switch, I mean like everybody has different kind of slight variations of themselves a little bit. But I think when we're amongst ourselves and we're kind of around the people we grew up with and our relatives, for lack of a better term, we maybe have our guards down and we probably act a little more Black. You know, the slang is different, the speech is different, our sense of humor is a little bit different. And when we enter the workforce or the education force, where we don't really own that shit, so we're kind of code switching and maybe toning down our jokes a little bit, or adjusting our speech to speak a little more like proper, or you know, whatever. And I noticed with Tony, he just seemed like himself. Yeah. And it could have been like, because he was talking to me, but he just seemed very much like himself. And the more he was talking, I was like, man, if I could drop $500 a week, I'd train with this guy every day. You know, like, this guy's amazing. And I just realized he was just being authentic and genuine, and his passion and his drive and his education spoke for itself. And so I took that with me, aside from all the other lessons, I took that with me. I think that was just really important to see, because it was someone in an environment that wasn't their own, but just being themselves and being proud and being wildly successful with it. And that was just really inspiring to see. So I think it made me want to give that to other people as well.
Right. Yeah. I can definitely relate to the code switch, because I have Irish JC and then I have American JC. You know, you never want to see full Irish JC come out, because it's just not a good experience.
Especially over here. Yeah, yeah, forget it. Your coworker's like, what the crack mean?
It's like DMX. I'm like, I'm mad all the time. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
So, after you touch base, you know, in that Starbucks and kind of got an idea of, like, what they expect going into to being a trainer and a coach, right? What was your next step? Like, did you have a job, or were you applying to places? And kind of how did you go about kind of setting up your business then? Because you mentioned you were moving to Boston soon, right?
Yeah, so I was moving to Boston at the time. You know, just when I got up there, I was living in Cambridge, and just where I ended up getting an apartment. The girl I was dating at the time was going to school up there for grad school, so we moved up and, you know, stayed together about 20 minutes after we moved, and then moved over our lives. No shame. We just, you know, things went our separate ways.
Yeah, it happens.
And, yeah, but when we got up there and I was like, well, I got to find work. I hadn't been training yet. I hadn't been training full time. I was full time as a FedEx driver.
Right.
Just, I was like, at the time, I needed a job with benefits and pay. And while I was doing that, I was just researching and studying. So I worked part time at a Gold's Gym, just doing like assistant management stuff. And I was just kind of getting my feet wet and just learning and researching as much as I needed to before diving in, because I realized early on from like my cousin Kenya and from other people that like it's a big commitment, and that it's not the kind of job where you just walk in and like, oh great, everybody's gonna train with me. Like, you really have to hustle and you gotta be ready for it. So
that is not what happens.
Yeah. No matter what they tell you, kids.
Yeah.
But I ended up moving into a place not far from Central Square, which is in Cambridge, kind of right between Harvard and MIT. And I kind of looked up and just researched where there was different gyms, of which core gyms in the area, and they have Boston Sports Club the same as they have New York Sports Club in New York and Philly. And so the people that I had learned from, that was the company they worked for.
Right.
And there was a lot of locations up there. So I said, all right, well, I have some options, and I kind of know how to navigate in this space a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so the nearest Boston Sports Club was right there in Cambridge in Central Square, which is kind of where you and I met. It was like a 15-minute walk from my house. So I was on my way. I was actually on my way to get my CPR cert, and I stopped in that club to fill out an application. And I knew I was just going to start applying in different places. I didn't know how long it would take.
Right.
But a couple things, kids. If you can apply for a training job, it doesn't mean you have a job. It means you have an opportunity. So it's kind of like signing up to be a salesman. Like,
yeah,
they're happy to give you the product and see if you can sell it. But if you don't sell it, it's like you're on your ass. But so I walked in and I was like, hey, you guys hiring for trainers? They're like, yeah. They gave me an application. And the fitness manager came up and said, hey, you have a minute? I was like, yeah. He interviewed me right there. He called my references within like an hour of me leaving. And then I got a call the next day and they were like, when can you start? Because I said I could open the gym like 3 days a week and they really needed an opener for 5:15. But anyway, I started there and just try to keep those voices in my head. It wasn't easy and the same as it was for you and anybody else starting as a trainer. But I just try to remember a lot of those talking points and a lot of those things I learned from people that I spoke to before. So just being myself, just being genuine, being passionate and just showing that I cared. Like I just was excited to share what I learned and help people reach their goals and help people just be better versions of themselves. And, you know, it, obviously it took a while to build up the clientele you needed, but it was just huge to be, because I did feel very out of my element. You know, if you're coming from Brooklyn, New York, moving up to Boston, moving up to Cambridge, it's in two different worlds.
It's a big jump,
and so I think being able to put all that aside and just going and focus on what I was focusing on made a big difference. Yeah. I think that's where, again, that representation was huge.
So I will tell you this. So we're going to fast forward a little bit because, you know, like, I met you later on. God, I don't even know. What year was it that we meet? It was like 2012?
Maybe 2010 to 2011.
You're right. 2010, 2011, yeah. And so one thing, that a major skill I learned from you, and I've never told you this before, so this might be a bit of a tearjerker moment. But I actually watched you and how you interacted with people and how you related to people, because you had a very, very vast clientele. Like, you had people who were like in tech, you had people who were entrepreneurs, you had just a vast range of people, but also from a vast range of backgrounds, and you were able to relate to everybody like it was nothing. You just made it seem very, very easy. And I just want to ask you about that and like how you went about building up those interpersonal skills, you know?
I appreciate that. I think that was, you know, I'll be the first to say that I definitely was not the most like, you know, full book knowledge trainer there. You know, like, I was, you know, certified and, you know, like, safe enough, you know,
right.
But I wasn't coming, you know, people like yourself, like, you know, Tyler, a lot of, you know, Reed, a lot of you guys came from like a different background with a lot more education. And, you know, I was much more self-taught. I kind of like learned from just being in the trenches of being in the gym since college and just being around it and learning what to do and not to do. And then, you know, got certified and got some continuing education. But through all of that, I think one thing that was helpful, useful to me was just being able to find some common thread with everyone that I was working with.
Yeah,
I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, Kenny said it to me early on and Charles said this to me early on, that was one thing that stuck to me a lot, was to say, you know, your clients, they have to trust you. You know, you have to establish a sense of trust, and they're not going to really trust someone that doesn't seem to care about them or their goals or them as a person. And so I don't think I took an approach. I wasn't like conscientiously doing this.
Right.
I think I just took a moment with each client to just take a genuine interest in like them. Like, who are you? And, you know, what are you into? What do you do? And what's your family like? And like, why are you here in the gym? Like, and then we would just talk, you know, because I think at the end of it all, people spend way more time with their trainers than they spend with like almost any other appointment based service they would ever do.
Right.
You know, like, you don't even, unless you're really picky about your lineup, you don't even see your barber as much as you see your trainer. You know, you see your doctor like once a year, unless you got some issues, and you see your dentist like twice a year, if that.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a very ongoing relationship with someone that you spend an hour with, you know, 1 to 3 times a week for most people.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of have to, you kind of have to not be a dick. Like, they kind of have to like spending time with you, and they have to be okay with like having a cup of coffee or a beer with you as much as they are okay with training with you.
Yeah.
And so I would approach the training with a lot of like, okay, here's what I know is going to work for you, and I'm going to help you get there, and I want, this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they needed to trust that that was going to work, and they needed to trust that, you know, the plan I had for them was going to be effective,
right,
instead of the thing they've been doing for 3 years before or not. So the rest of the time, it was just let me get to know you and let's just have a conversation. And I would just put my interest and my focus in them.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really, it didn't matter, you know, their age or their background or their profession. I think it was just like, we're all, it sounds very cliche and cheesy, but like, you know, we're all human beings on earth. So we all, there's always some commonality with anyone you come across.
Yeah, for sure.
Over time you find that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just, you know, just having fun with that and just learning from each other, I think was huge. So that's part of why I enjoyed my job. It was just to get to spend time with people and connect with them and hang out with them, and then hopefully watch them get in shape. And if not, they eat too much cake on the weekends.
I will say that, like, coming out of, like, an internship and all this knowledge you've acquired, right, you're like, oh, I want to show these people how much I know. But, you know, like you said, once they kind of trust you, they're like, yeah, I'm not really interested in the details. We'll hang out and kind of get to know each other. Because if you approach it from a standpoint of, like, I'm going to flood you with training philosophies and details and, you know, I'm going to, throw percentages at you. And they don't want to hear that, you know.
Yeah. I equate that to, like, if you had to go, let's say for some unfortunate reason you had to go in for a surgery of some kind, surgical procedure. You finally meet with the surgeon. You don't want them to be like, okay, here's what's going to happen. I have a video. Now, we're going to make this incision here. Now, you can see the drill goes right into your femur, and we're going to pull it out. And you're like, try not to vomit. You just want them to say, hey, I'm going to take care of you. You're in good hands. And when you come out of this, you're going to be 100% better.
Right.
And that's really kind of what it comes down to. Like, you're talking over your client's head a lot of times when you're getting into the tech stuff that we learn. You really just want you to hear, like, hey, this workout's going to kind of suck, but we're going to talk and make it fun. And, you know, in a few weeks, a few months, you're going to look and feel great. So let's get after it. Right. That's really what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. True story. Not too long ago, probably like 7 months, I had a dental procedure done. And I'm not even joking with you here. The dentist came in, like, and put on a video, and I was like, why would you show me that? I was like, you motherfucker, why did you show me that?
Oh, my God. Wow. Okay, so, well, he's listened to this podcast before.
Lesson is, I'm not going back there again.
Yeah, unless you're trying to become a dentist, there's no need for that.
That's true. Here's what not to do. But yeah, so I think following on from that, then, you know, you have developed these skills, these interpersonal skills. You're also a pretty, you know, qualified coach at this point, and you're just building your bucket training then. For, for people looking to get into your position and become a coach and kind of learn from you, what are your biggest tips? And I think we've kind of mentioned, you know, someone, perhaps a mentor to kind of follow in that regard, right?
Yeah. I'd say meet with a person of color at Starbucks. And in all reality, I think, you know, representation is one thing, but I think, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to learn only from people that are like yourself.
Right. Right.
You know, I think everyone I've worked with throughout this journey has been a mentor. And I think, I mean, there's been great mentors. Like, I mean, as much as you talk about, like, some of the interpersonal stuff, like watching and learning from how you trained your clients and how, like, organized and succinct and consistent it was. Like, you weren't like experimenting with a million different things. It was just like tried true formulas and your clients were getting really good results. Mm-hmm. And then they just kept sticking with it.
Right.
You know, a lot of you guys came out of Boyles, you know, you guys have a good solid background. I ended up interning at Boyles, but I ended up taking the CFSC. Shout out to Marco Sanchez.
Yeah.
Ended up getting my certified functional strength coach cert a few years ago, and it kind of coached you through the process of how you guys structure and program for people.
Right.
All you guys were mentors to me, in a sense. And even some people that we worked with that may not have been the best trainers, you at least were like, all right, let me just make sure I never do that. you know, you just take and just learn from wherever you can learn from. But most importantly, in the beginning, learn from people that are successful, learn from people that seem genuine, you know, that seem to take an interest. I think the thing that, again, stuck out to me from Kenya to Tony Charles to a lot of other people is when they would coach me or mentor me or offer me a tip or offer some advice, I could just see how excited it made them to do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like, this is just what they do. This is part of, like, you know, present that more than anything else when you get into, you know, personal training or group X, like, show that passion, that genuine interest and care for helping people and for teaching and for coaching.
Right.
And that person's going to have that confidence. Like, they don't need to see the dental operation video. the biggest, you know, do your research and read and do a lot of that, but just spend time in the environment that you want to work in. So whether it's in the fitness industry, whether it's in music, whether it's in, you know, the service industry, like, spend time in that environment. Just talk to and converse with and learn from people that are already doing well. Mm-hmm. And it kind of like this, like, ask them what they did,
yeah.
You know, ask them kind of what got them there and realize that it might take a little more time than you anticipated. It may not be as instant as just like getting hired at a place or walking your foot in the door. It might take a little research and a little groundwork. Mm-hmm. before you see that final success, but just stick with it. Yeah. Just keep learning.
So I really like that point, because my initial time at BSC was basically just kind of like watching you, watching other coaches I admired, and, you know, afterwards going up to me like, hey, can I ask you a question? Or, you know, what were you doing there? Because in the beginning, like you said, they'll hire you, but you're not actually getting paid till you start coaching sessions. Like, you might have some floor hours, but you're getting like minimum wage, if that, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, people initially come in to be a coach and they're like, you know, all right, I'm going to train my sessions and that's it. And I was like, no, early on, you need to put in some groundwork and make yourself available to be around the environment, like you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, definitely. A personal training specifically, like if you're going into commercial gym, even going to like a Gold's, 24 Hour Fitness, and Equinox, you know, what's some other ones out there? Lifetime?
Yeah,
that's like one of the big ones. Yeah, if you're on personal training, you got to kind of live in the gym. Mm-hmm. You got to live in the gym. You got to be on the floor. You have to be outgoing. You have to get real comfortable with being rejected, you know, like not taking anything personal, because you're going to deal with it a lot.
Yeah.
And just move on and just you know, depending on where you work, some of them do good at like helping you, like coaching you on business practices and giving you metrics and numbers to shoot for and things like that.
Right.
But it's a very self-taught craft more than anything else. So if you can find mentors and coaches and people to guide you along the way, it really takes you far. And if you find someone that you feel confident in what they're doing because of representation, because they remind you of yourself in some way, whatever it is, like if you need that to kind of convince you like, okay, I can do this, then great.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is one thing. It's a slow road, and you gotta build some bricks to get up there.
That's true. Yeah, looking back, I always laugh at the story you told me about this one cat in particular who, you know, maybe wasn't too happy about being asked to do other things around the gym initially in his training career, and it was like, I ain't no janitor.
Oh my God! Yeah, I think when he threatened to fight his boss, he was let's step outside. Like, yeah, we're gonna call it a day.
So another good lesson in what not to do.
Well, I think that's good advice for anybody that's, especially people that are going to school for, you know, something exercise related.
Right.
Is your degree doesn't like you're everybody's starting from square one. So I've hired groups of trainers, like five of them at once, and like three of them have a degree in exercise science, one of them may have a master's and a CSCS or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, two of them worked at like a Crunch or another smaller gym and just got a certification and either didn't go to college or went to college for something.
Right.
Totally out of left field. And they all have to do the same tasks and do the same things. Right. Usually the ones that maybe have worked some harder jobs or have worked in the gym before tend to fare okay because they don't have this expectation that they're like their education exempts them from other tasks. But yeah, you're in there, and depending on where you're working, you got to put some weights away. You might have to wipe down equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have to, you might have to do some shit you don't want to do. You know, it's work, and it's almost like an internship or an apprenticeship in the beginning.
Exactly.
You know, like I think one quick bit of advice that I try to give to people when I've hired them or when they've come in, you know, into a different direction is, you know, these gyms are, they provide all the space you need to market. You can build a great career out of it. Mm-hmm. But your job is to like make them money. Like they're not hiring you because they want to make you happy and give you money to be in the gym. Like you're there to sell yourself as a trainer and like get people that are paying a membership to pay more money for training.
Right.
And if you can show them that you do that, they'll pay you more. Like if you can do 100 sessions a month, they're going to pay you a little more. And if you can do 150 sessions a month, they're going to really pay you more.
Right.
Because they're going to reward you for making the money. But that's what you're there for. So when you're new and you have no clients and they're paying you to work 5 days a week on a floor shift and they're paying you for workshops and all these things, like they're just putting money into you and you haven't shown them anything, any return yet.
Right.
Like they're just cranking money to you. You're covering a floor shift, but like that's kind of it. The maintenance person can put the weights away. Like you're there to build your business. So you might have to eat a little humble pie in the beginning and just know like, hey, I may not love everything they want me to do, but I've got to earn my keep. And I'm like kind of apprenticing and learning and in this environment until I sharpen these skills and these sales skills and these business skills. And then after a little while, when they see like, oh, you're actually doing pretty well, then you make a really good living. But yeah, it's not a sweet start.
Yeah. I like that. That's I think that's a really good kind of introduction to someone who may want to become a coach while also incorporating like the representation aspect of things and you know, how to go about it in the right way. you know, and say, because if you dive in head first and you leave your current job and just go straight, I'm going to be a trainer, you don't know a whole lot about it, you're in for a rude awakening, you know? So.
Yeah. It's a slap in the face with a very big hand. Well, if you like, because you came right out of like, you got your schooling and you did your internship at Boyles, and I think you worked at Boyles for a little while.
Right.
And then you came straight to BSC after that, correct?
Well, I was there during the internship too, yeah.
Yeah. And then you were at BSC. So you didn't like leave to go like work for a team somewhere, like a school or a team or something like that, right?
So I was doing like graduate assistant coaching after college, but I mean, it was
different environment.
Yeah.
Right. And if you get hired as a strength coach, your job is to like be there to be a good coach and make their athletes better and keep them safe.
Right.
Right. So they're paying you to like they already have the structure and they have athletes that are there to work, and that's it. If you're a personal trainer, like, it's different when you're training athletes because their motivation is just to be better athletes. They're going to go in and just do what they're told.
Exactly.
If you're in a gym full of people that all kind of want to look and feel better, but they don't quite know how to do it, mm-hmm. and you have to laterally, like they're paying a membership, but you have to convince them, like, hey, if you pay me, I'll help you learn how to do this. It's a whole different field. And so there's a lot more work. And it's, you're selling yourself, but you're also you're selling yourself like every single day and every week. Mm-hmm. Like you're continuing to sell yourself to the same person over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's just to instill that trust and that value. So it's a lot to learn. It's a lot to research before you dive into it. It's like that Friends episode where Chandler wanted to quit the gym and they bust him out. Like, don't you want 6-pack abs? And it's like, most people are not that invested. Like they do, but they don't want to, you know. So you're like walking around the gym all day, like, don't you want 6-pack abs? Like it's, and then just like, kind of, but not really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. I think we'll have a lot of questions from people as follow-ups to this episode. So if you're listening, like hit us up on Instagram, Pillars of Health Pod, drop us a question in the comment section, or just email us, pillarsofhealthpod@gmail.com. We'll include the email address in the show notes. But I want to thank you, Danny, for your input today. Very, very good insight, my man.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And guys, listening, if you have a second, leave us a review on the iTunes podcast directory, if you will, and that would be awesome, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Peace.